first criterion, right? That basically is a way to detect separable states. So basically, this is the realization that if you have a state that is a product state, well, sorry, a separable state, that is a convex combination of product states, if I take the partial transpose with respect to one of the subsystems, then the resulting state, the resulting density, partial transpose density matrix happens to still be a density matrix, therefore it's a positive operator, because it's a semi-definite operator, right? Well, that basically tells me if rho AB is separable, then I know that the partial transpose are positive semi-definite. So that's nice. I can use this criterion to define a measure of entanglement. All right. Oh, well, a measure of entanglement, something that may look like a measure of entanglement. Let me define negativity. Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, call it negativity. Probably B. And it's going to be, if you want, a sum of minus 0, sigma I, where sigma I are the eigenvalues of OAB DTV or partial transpose. I'm not going to specify which one because it's the same no matter which one you take. All right, makes sense, everybody? So in a way, this is a notion that characterizes how negative a partial transpose density matrix is, and therefore how negative it is gives you an idea of how non-separable it is. At least that would be the case if this were a double implication. At the very least, you know if negativity is not zero, then there is entanglement, for sure. Now, problem with this, there's another question about it, so let me just find the notion of distillable entanglement. Right? Which is, I'm going to define it in a rough way. Distillable entanglement is the amount of real pairs that one can obtain from n copies of OAB and LOCC. It's a very rough definition, but that's the function for now. So what do we call distillable entanglement? Distillable entanglement is, well, how many, imagine that I need Bell states for something. I want to prepare Bell states. And I'm given n copies of some system that maybe is entangled, right? And then I ask, okay, just through LOCC, if I'm allowed to do LOCC, so local operations and classical communication, how many Bell pairs can I obtain using the n copies in any way I want with LOCC? It says, this is within, I don't know if you see any resource theory, maybe in foundation, but this thing is related to resource theory. Yeah. Go ahead.
I have two questions. Is that always integer valued?
Sorry, say again?
Is distillable entanglement always integer valued?
No. Oh, no.
So you can have like half?
No, because an average. I mean, again, I didn't write the right definition, right? It's an optimization on an average. Okay. But I just gave, I don't want to get into the particulars of that. Take some time.
And why would we not define it for just the state rho AB? And not
because then it would be zero if it's not a Bell state. LOCC cannot create entanglement. So if you start from less, not zero, I mean, you wouldn't hit even one.
The copies aren't entangled, but somehow that means.
No, the copies have to be, every copy is entangled in order to get distillable entanglement. In fact, the distillable entanglement is a measure of entanglement in a way in its own right. So we're going to check what negative. Yeah, no, rho AB has to have entanglement, otherwise you would not be able to get any Bell states through LOCC. Yep.
Sorry, so are we averaging over n, or are we taking a limit?
So we are taking a limit an optimizer, sorry, not taking a limit, optimizing an average. I mean, I could give you a better definition. It would take a while.
It's like the ratio or of something.
No, it's literally, it's optimize over all possible LOC that you can do on copies of that. And take the, assume, for example, you can do it at constant n. It depends on the resources. So imagine that you have 100 copies. And then you can say, OK, how much distillable entanglement is there in there?
I see.
Or you can actually say, all right, imagine that I give you infinitely many copies. So it's going to infinity. Can you extract a finite number of Bell states from that? You can have several definitions. Now, the one, the most standard one, just quickly. Right. The most standard one is leaving the n as a, as I said, as a variable as well. Level entanglement is a function of n as well. And it's related to the number of copies that you have access to of this entanglement. Make sense?
Can you explain again? Because I was trying to read and I'm very blind. So
okay.
If you can just explain again this
distillable entanglement. Imagine I give you n copies of a state rho AB, and those are mixed states. And you have a protocol in quantum information that requires Bell states. We'll see one at the end of this topic. And the question is, OK, how many Bell states can you extract from that? Oh, well, if you allow me to create entanglement, you're not allowed to create entanglement. Otherwise, you know, your resource of entanglement comes from this many copies of entangled state. What am I allowed to do? LOCC. You can do local operations, and you can chat with the other side of the entangled state, right? And then decide what you do locally on A and on B. And then you ask, OK, how many Bell states can you extract from that? That's that notion. Is that clear, everybody? Now,
I have a question on this part. How do we see, since you said that both for any partial trace you take A or B, it will be the same?
So it won't be the same.
Sigma will be the same.
It won't be the same number, but it would be a measure of entanglement in any way, in any case.
Yeah, but means how sigma I will be, means what you're saying that the eigenvalues of partial trace, either A or B.
Partial transpose. You pick one of them. It doesn't matter.
But they'll not be the same, means will there be?
Oh, you're asking me the sum of negative eigenvalues will be the same if you take one or the other partial transpose. Yeah, it will be the same. Yeah, indeed.
But it's trivial. I can see it.
No, it's not trivial. It's related to the fact that the sum of eigenvalues cannot be anything. This is trace bounded and it's positive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could you see it by the fact that, like, the partial transpose of B is like the partial transpose of A and then overall? And that overall transpose shouldn't change.
But again, it's because it's a density operator. Huh? It would not be true in general if this was not trace one, for example. Like you can have different dimensions as well. So the domain of the domain of the transpose and the domain of the row would not be the same. It becomes a little bit more difficult unless you trace bound it. Make sense? We haven't gotten here yet. Well, we're going to revisit this.
Okay.
Notion of distillable entanglement is understood, hopefully. Now, the idea with this is that, well, not every time that you have entangled states, you're going to be able to extract Bell pairs at all. You need particular kinds of entangled states. And one thing that I'm going to give you with a proof is that if OAB has any distillable entanglement, then negativity row AB are the two. So negativity is actually giving you an idea of the distillable entanglement. How many Bell pairs can you extract with a protocol of entanglement distillation from n copies of a state rho AB? Make sense? In fact, if rho AB is non-separable, and negativity of rho AB equal to zero, then we say that rho AB has only bound entanglement. Definition about entanglement, entanglement does not distillable. Make sense?
Sorry, you said the definition of bound entanglement is non-distillable?
Bound entanglement is entanglement that's not distillable. That cannot be, you cannot obtain Bell pairs from it through LOCC. Make sense? I know it's a bunch of notions.
So
that go ahead.
If the state is non-separable, even then we can have negativity T to be zero. Then but how does it characterize as a measure of entanglement then?
Well, it's not true, but I drew this table here because we're going to go over everything that we've introduced or will introduce. Entanglement, I could even talk about mutual information here because we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to see if they satisfy all the requirements that we want for measures of entanglement. Well, clearly negativity doesn't.
Yeah, that's
what but neither does entanglement entropy. So we'll see what fails in each because maybe under some assumptions, they are measures of entanglement, each of them. Makes sense so far, what I'm writing?
What is bound entanglement?
A definition. Okay. Entanglement does not distillable. Make sense? This is just introducing the nomenclature. If you hear bound entanglement, I mean entanglement is not distillable. What do you mean by distillable? Well, entanglement that you can transform into Bell pairs through LOCC. That protocol is typically those protocols that go from n copies of an entangled state to m copies of Bell states are called entanglement distillation protocol. Which makes sense. You kind of like, you know, purify the entanglement in a way. Make sense? All right. Now, particular cases, as I wrote the other day. Everybody sees if I write here. If the dimension of rho AB is equals to 2 by 2 or 3 by 2, then rho AB separable if and only if negativity rho AB is 0. It is important to remember. So for 2 qubits or a qubit and a qutrit, negativity is actually a good measure of entanglement. Now, it's also true for other cases, but those cases, it would take, so for example, in continuous variables, if I say the notion, if I tell you a Gaussian state, do you know what I'm talking about? If I say a Gaussian state? No? You know what a Wigner function is? If you haven't seen that, so there is a subset, when we work with continuous variables, think of 1 degree of freedom, okay? 1 continuous degree of freedom. And think of a free particle, a harmonic oscillator, whatever you prefer, 1 degree of freedom. The question about whether we're working with quantum mechanics, so imagine that I tell you, is my theory quantum or classical? Well, I mean, I have a classical theory, 1 degree of freedom, and what do I do to make it quantum? Well, what I make is the quantization map. I map the Poisson bracket to I over h bar commutator, right? And I say that I represent every dynamical variable as a self-adjoint operator in a Hilbert space, as per the postulates of quantum mechanics. That's the quantization process. And then somebody can come back at me and say, oh, but you just did something fancy. You're playing with the representation theory of classical mechanics, maybe, right? I said, well, no, this is actually new. This is different from classical mechanics. How is that different? Are you sure? Isn't this just a different classical theory? What makes it different from a classical theory? OK, then you can ask, what is the most general classical theory that you can think of? Well, the most general classical theory that I can think of is probability distributions over phase space, a statistical mechanics. I can do that. I can have probability distributions, and those probabilities come from ignorance, for example. Can I rewrite quantum mechanics as a probabilistic theory over phase space? That's the key point. And the answer is, well, in general, you can't. But that's a course that I teach in UW, quantum theory 3. In general, you can't do it. Why? Because if you try to do it, then you find that there is no good way of defining a probability distribution over phase space that captures, you know, the quantum mechanics, this quantization, the effect of this quantization map. Almost, though, you can define quasi-probability distribution. You have to give up something. A probability distribution has to be, you know, normalized to one. Integral over all phase space should be one. Probability distribution should be positive semi-definite. Well, one of the most common ways of actually mapping quantum mechanics to a probabilistic theory of a phase space is using something called the Wigner function. And the Wigner function is a quasi-probability distribution that is positive, not positive semi-definite. So it can get negative. It is normalized to one, where you integrate over all phase space, but the distribution can be negative. And then you can tell, all right, so I can talk about the non-classicality of the theory by how negative I need to get in this probability distribution in order to talk about the physics that I'm talking about. And that, is there a question? And that, again, is a measure of how quantum something is. Okay. Within quantum mechanics, though, there's a set of states and a set of time evolutions, Hamiltonians, if you want, that are pretty classical. Those are what we call Gaussian states. Gaussian states are states whose Wigner function is actually a Gaussian, a multidimensional Gaussian over phase space. As you know, that is positive semi-definite. This is a proper probabilistic theory. So it's a classical theory. It's a different classical theory from your classical mechanics, but still a classical theory. Nobody would need anything revolutionary to do Gaussian quantum mechanics. That said, Gaussian quantum mechanics includes Gaussian states. Gaussian states are coherent states of the vacuum of a harmonic oscillator, for example, a quantum field theory as well, obviously, free quantum field theory. Coherent states are displaced vacua, if you want. Thermal states, it includes squeeze states, multimode squeeze states. You know the two-mode squeeze vacuum? You know what that is? Are you into ADS CFT? They call it the thermal field dual. In quantum optics, that's called two-mode squeeze state. That is a Gaussian state. So it's kind of cool because you have a classical theory, but you have states that have entanglement. How can that happen? Is an entanglement genuinely quantum? Well, the answer is no. You can have states that are very classical in terms that I can describe it as a probabilistic distribution over phase space, still they have entanglement. You cannot violate Bell inequalities with them, but that's a different story. In order to, it has been proven, to violate Bell inequalities with Gaussian states, you need to break Gaussianity at some point in the measurement process, for example. If you measure with non-Gaussian measurements, Gaussian measurements are those that map Gaussian states to Gaussian states, then you won't be able to acknowledge that entanglement. Now, quadratic Hamiltonians, Hamiltonians that are quadratic form in phase space variables, preserve Gaussianity. Map Gaussian states to Gaussian states through time evolution. Okay, so that subset of quantum mechanics is very helpful. It's very cool. We use it a lot. And it's nice because instead of working with infinite dimensional Hilbert spaces, you can just work with a finite dimensional phase space, which is a classical theory. So for Gaussian states, I will answer the question, but for Gaussian states, this is also true. So if you have infinite dimensions and you have a Gaussian state in continuous variables, then negativity is also a good measure of entanglement. Not getting into there because if we move to infinite dimensions, then we only talk about this for the rest of the course. Question.
So very simply, you could say that Gaussian states and Gaussian measurements are in, let's say, quantum optics and all these other disciplines you mentioned, like Clifford Gates and quantum computation, in the sense that they...
Yeah, we haven't seen Gates yet, but yeah, we'll see. That's an analogy there. Yeah, indeed.
Kind of a way to, you know, isolate that kind of classical subspace.
Yeah. So if you limit yourself to everything being Gaussian, then it's a classical theory. And there's no way to violate Bell inequalities. Because again, it's a classical theory. You can think of it as hidden variables, no problem. We know that classical theories are local realistic. However, if you allow, if everything is Gaussian except for just the measurement, that's enough. Then you can violate Bell inequalities. And that's why, you know, those states matter and they have entanglement, and you talk about quantum mechanics. They can certainly violate quantum mechanics. You just need to violate Gaussianity somewhere. Again, there's a whole course about that at UW. Again, I'm just telling you a quick summary in a couple minutes. So a lot of belief, right, in what I'm telling you, if you haven't seen any of that. It's interesting stuff. Huh? So if you're interested, we can talk more about it at some point. I just mentioned because Gaussian states are very common, very helpful, appear everywhere in all the fields of physics that use quantum theory and work with infinite dimensions. And it so happens that for those, negativity also works well. I mean, works well meaning it's a faithful measure of entanglement. The condition is satisfied that separable means zero negativity. Make sense, buddy? Good. Now, negativity, let me define, oh, I can do the board thing. Let me define another measure of entanglement first. Like this, maybe. Concurrence.
Sorry, can I ask a...
Yeah, please.
Real quick. I guess I'm just having trouble trying to imagine, like, could you write an example? Is it easy to write an example of a state with bound entanglement? I'm just having trouble seeing...
Not easy.
Not easy, that's okay. But okay.
I mean, you'll find, you can Google example. Off the top of my mind, no. I would have to just find one.
Just
with
up.
Only bound entanglement, right? That's what you want.
I mean, ideally, but it's, yeah. It's fine.
But Google it after class. Yes, I want to be able to brainstorm here in chat. All right. So, concurrence. What is concurrence? Well, let me just define it first, give you the definition, and then we talk a little bit about it. OAB is inf on PJs and all possible pure states of this maybe I'll call it differently. Where this calligraphic C function of your state is square root of 2, 1 minus the trace of rho a square. Well, of course, rho a is, again, as we defined before, the partial trace with respect to b of the state I call it as yeah. All right, let's take a look at this. Concurrence here is a horrible definition. And by horrible, I mean it's difficult to compute. You need to do an optimization. Basically, this is telling you the idea is the following. The idea is, okay, if I have a pure state, I have a notion of state purity, right? That is 1 minus the trace of rho squared, right? State purity, rho square, if the state is pure, is 1. Rho square is the same state, a projector, if the state is pure. And the trace of rho square, then is 1 for a pure state. For a mixed state, the trace of rho square will be less than 1. So this idea, in fact, the trace of rho square is bounded by 1 over the dimension and 1. It goes from 1 over the dimension to 1. And for the maximally mixed state, it would be 1 over the dimension, right? The identity. Times 1 over d, normally. Now, this basically tells you, if my state is pure, this is a measure of entanglement, because it's telling me, like, okay, I know that this state is pure, and then when I trace one of the states, right, one of their subsystems, I'm going to get a mixed state. That mixedness, ignorance, that I have because I had entanglement, because originally I knew everything, and now I ignore parts. Make sense? So, this quantifies, is a way of quantifying that ignorance. It's like an entropy in a way. The trace of rho square tells you how much ignorant you are, how much mixed you are. The opposite, how pure you are, rather. Make sense? Is that understood? That for a pure state, this would be quantifying entanglement, and why?
That is a 2 or?
It's a number 2, yeah.
sense.
It makes sense to everybody that for a pure state, this calligraphic C that I defined, for a bipartite pure state, this is a measure of entanglement. It's as good as the entropy, if you want, because it tells you how much ignorance. Entropy is like more connected with an informational interpretation. But this also tells you how mixed you are when you erase one of the subsystems, right? Now, basically, you could say, what if I consider I have a row, right, that is some probabilistic distribution over this, like every row, right? A mixed row could be a probabilistic distribution over these kinds of states in general. And they said, right, what about getting the convex combination of this? It's related to the relative entropy that was suggested, right? What about considering a convex combination with the same coefficients, with the PIs, of this quantity, right? If it's a mixture of these things, maybe a convex combination of them would work. It doesn't. It doesn't because that thing can increase under LOCC, if you define it like that. Keep in mind that this decomposition in states is not unique, right? I have many ways to begin with. I have many ways of doing this decomposition. Finding, given a row AB, as you know, because you did that in the tutorial on union from before, obviously most of you just did it like that, right? That there's no unique decomposition in pure states of a density matrix. So they say, okay, fine, how about this? I do all the possible decompositions, and I compute the one that minimizes the quantity. Is that a measure of entanglement? Turns out it is. That, the logic behind it is that. It's saying, all right, of all the decompositions, find me this quantity, right? A convex combination, but the smallest possible value that you can have over all possible decompositions that you can have. And that is a measure of entanglement. Now, when you hear concurrence, typically people don't write this. The reason is that this thing, this concurrence defined as this, is an okay measure of entanglement. It's just horrible to compute. It's difficult. This optimization is highly non-trivial. It's a very difficult optimization problem. Oh, I do it with a computer. Good luck. If you're in dimension 6 or 7, you're done. Yep.
Sorry, so you're also, I think you just said this, but the PJ, you're optimizing over them to be as small as possible as well?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, given optimization over all possible, this means optimization over all possible decompositions as convex combination of pure state projectors. That's what the notation means.
I was just comparing it to, we were working on this stabilizer rank idea for magic. And there you're just interested in the number of, you know, summons in the sum.
Right.
This seems even more complicated.
Oh, it is more complicated, yes. It's one of the difficult, when you have definitions like that, you might as well not have, they're good for the formal purpose, but it's not a practical measure of entanglement as written. It so happens that if you have pure states, it becomes easy, right? Oh, sorry, you have pure states, use the freaking entropy, which is actually more connected to information, right?
I
go ahead.
How is this, the get related to row AB? Because...
Oh, it's not. I mean, again, this is, remember, I'm going to optimize. Oh, yeah, I didn't really say, right? Oh, yeah, yeah, sorry. I didn't write because, good. I thought I wrote this. So row AB can be written, sum over J, PJ. JAB. My bad. I just forgot to read that.
Okay, I see.
My bad.
So the PJ are fixed.
Once you find the decomposition, the PJ is fixed. But the notation here is optimization over all possible such decomposition. Yep.
I guess I'm just having trouble seeing, like, why is there the two? Why did we take a square root? It feels like it would still be an entanglement measure.
It would. I agree.
But then why
convenience. People want particular. I'm not going to defend concurrence. There's one measure of entanglement I don't quite like.
Like, why not just replace it with the trace of rho a squared instead of this complicated?
Because they want these things to go from 0 to 1, and they want these things to be good bounds for other things, and putting the two helps. Things like that. Again, I'm not going to defend this measure of entanglement. It's very ad hoc, in my opinion. We will see if it relates to something else. Now, with that definition, with the two and everything, this is the one people love. There are many people who love concurrence. Okay.
Can you maybe say a bit more for the motivation of it?
I don't really have that info for the motivation. Well, I can tell you why they use it. The motivation to propose it. No, the motivation to propose it is historical. If you want, it's like, all right. Can I think I can write my rho that is mixed in general as this. Can I think of the entanglement of every summand in here? If we added weighted with the probabilities, is that a measure of entanglement? That's a way, you know. How do I characterize entanglement in a mixed state? So, well, just write it as a decomposition of pure states. And maybe the entanglement of the pure states is related to the entanglement of the total state. And then you quickly realize that that doesn't work. And then you say, okay, why doesn't it work? Well, this decomposition is not unique. So to begin with, so which one is a measure of entanglement? Okay, what if I actually pick a particular decomposition? Which one? Well, I know that every individual state being entangled, maybe when I sum everything, I know cases that the entanglement is going to cancel. The terms that are make it not separable may cancel with each other. Sure, but then optimize for the maximum possible cancellation of the entanglement of the individual ones. I'm talking very roughly, and that gives you the minimization of it. And then after that, you prove that it's an entanglement measure. Make sense? In terms of the idea, how it came to be?
Yeah. I guess I'm just surprised that we're not trying to minimize the number of summons, but instead really the C itself.
Well, it's all possible decompositions, I repeat, right? So you compute everything for all possible decompositions that you can find like that. Some of them would have more terms, some of them have fewer terms, right? It depends on the rank of your royalty. Makes sense, everybody, about the intuitive notion behind this. Now, or a 2x2 system, then, well, if you didn't like this, you're going to like this even less. For good reason. You can prove that this is this minus lambda 2 minus lambda 3 minus lambda 4, where lambda 1 larger equal lambda 2 larger equal lambda 3 larger equal lambda 4 are the eigenvalues of the operator. I'm just trying to write the operator R defined as R is the square root of the square root of rho hat. Okay. Oh, wait for it. Wait for it. AB rho tilde square root of rho hat AB, where rho tilde is equal to sigma y tensor sigma y. So it looks what you call sigma y even, the conjugate, the complex conjugate of rho AB, sigma y tensor sigma y, and the complex conjugation is taken in on the eigenbasis of sigma set. You write your density matrix in the sigma set eigenbasis, whatever you decide is sigma set eigenbasis, and find this operator sigma y tends to sigma y in that for that choice, and then compute this quantity, and diagonalize this, or find the eigenvalues rather, order them, subtract the smaller ones from the larger one, and if that's larger than zero, that's the concurrence. That is easy to compute. Easy. By easy, I mean computers can do it in polynomial time. Make sense? Okay. I'm not going to prove that. You're going to have to. With this definition, this is true. Or a 2x2 system. Make sense, everybody? It doesn't? Well.
No, I mean, like.
Should make sense, but.
I think your presentation was clear. It's just.
There's a nice paper by Wouters and others that talk about this, if you want to read it. I don't like concurrence. It's very popular. The reason it's very popular is because concurrence is a faithful measure of entanglement. Now, most people call concurrence just this. You're not going to see that. That is intractable in most cases. People use concurrence typically in this regime. So for a two-qubit system, is what people actually use it for. because this is easy to compute, easy, quote unquote. By easy, I mean not for for humans, easy for computers to compute.
Didn't we just say that the partial transpose is a set, is like a faithful measure of entanglement in two qubit systems?
And you see why I don't like concurrence, right? Can you guess which entanglement measure I prefer?
So this requires lambda 1 to be greater.
Say again?
So this requires lambda 1 to be greater than the sum of all the other.
Oh, once you diagonalize, you order them by which one is larger. Put the largest one first. If they're the same, it doesn't matter. Just if the first one and the second largest in absolute value are the same, then, well, they're positive anyways, because that thing is a positive operator. So then it will be zero, obviously. Makes sense?
Both these are equivalent definitions for 2 cross 2 systems.
That's right. This and this is the same for qubit system, 2 qubits. All right. Now, why is concurrence? I gave you the reasons. Again, I'm biased in my presentation because I don't like it. But I think this kind of speaks for itself. I have many reasons to prefer negativity. There's one reason to like concurrence. Okay? Let me just write it. Entanglement of formation. Now, you are seeing, I told you, that deciding if a state is separable or not is an NP-hard problem. So quantifying how much entanglement is somewhere in some state is not easy. That's, I think, one notion that you should have in mind. It's not easy at all. That's why those things and those definitions, even the ones that make a lot of sense, are intractable most of the time. Okay? Entanglement of formation. Entanglement of formation. All right. It's roughly, I'm going to define the same way I define distillability, because the process that defines distillable entanglement is the inverse of that. So imagine that I give you n Bell pairs. So the opposite. Your target is to create a state, rho AB, right, that is entangled. And then you say, OK, I want to know how many Bell pairs I need in order to create that state. Make sense? Your resources, well, I have local operations and classical communications. I can do anything locally. And if I need entanglement, I use Bell pairs. And that says the analogy with universal quantum computing comes up. I can do anything I want locally, but I need entanglement to create entangled state. That's the non-local part. All right, so the entanglement of formation is amount of Bell pairs needed to prepare generally, this is defined as n copies of amount of Bell states needed to prepare n copies of, but I'm just going to say a target state OAB with LOCC. So you give it a bunch of Bell states, and you're allowed to do LOCC, and tell you, OK, how many Bell states do I actually need to make this? Make sense? Entanglement of formation. All right. Entanglement of formation is entanglement of formation is also difficult because you need to optimize. I mean, I don't know if writing the expression would actually be any helpful, but I'll write it. E of a state rho AB is the minimum over, I'm going to write the inf. We're not getting into trouble. This is just me trying to be always conservative with what I write. The I of the entanglement of formation of some pure state. All right. Where the E of a pure state it's equal to rho A, which is equal to rho B, right? So this is the entanglement entropy. The entanglement entropy of psi I A B. Since
here again rho A B is P I.
Yes, same as rho. Indeed. So the entanglement of formation is very intuitive. Actually, it's telling you, right, I know that the entanglement entropy is a good measure of entanglement for pure states. If I have a mixed state, what about the convex combination of the entropies? No, that won't work. Entropy is subadditive. You're going to have problems with that. Also, there are infinitely many decompositions that I can think of for that state. Sure, minimize that. And then you get a measure of entanglement. This is very intuitive. It's, again, as intractable as the concurrence definition. You can tell that it's exactly the same thing. Now, the function is less arbitrary, right? It's basically this, but instead of using it, it's kind of what you were saying. Why use that, right? Is why not the trace of rho squared, 1 minus the trace of rho squared without the root or with anything? Why not the entropy, which actually makes sense from the informational point of view? But that's what you have, entanglement of formation. Now, unsurprisingly, the nice thing about it is that the entanglement entropy is related to the concurrence. As you can tell, you can relate the two, and it's not difficult to relate the two. Again, an expression that you may, the entanglement of formation of rho AB is actually equal to h of, h is a function of argument 1 plus square root of 1 minus c rho AB square, all divided by 2, where h is a function that you may recognize, I don't know, it depends on how much you've been thinking about entanglement in partitions of many body systems or even fields. So if it's not at all, you may not recognize it, but let's see if you recognize it. Minus x log 2 of x minus 1 minus x. Well, also if you don't probability theory, log 2 of minus x. Make sense, everybody? Now, this thing tells you that, sure, concurrence, I have a nice way to compute it. Nice, as in like, you know what I mean by nice, right? That I can compute the entanglement of formation, which has a clear meaning, physical informational meaning. In fact, the entanglement of formation is a faithful measure of entanglement. So E of is a faithful. By faithful, I mean satisfies all the axioms. Measure of entanglement. That has one nice thing. You know what the nicest thing about the entanglement of formation is? What is it for pure states? Remind me. Right here.
Zero?
No, no. The entanglement entropy. Entropy. So this is a generalization of the entanglement entropy to mixed states. Make sense? A generalization is something that is the same in the cases the other thing is defined, and it's something that makes sense outside. Because of course, I could tell you, I can generalize the sum, right? Just the regular sum, and call it an Eduardo sum. And what is that generalization? Well, the sum is the sum that you know whenever you can do the sum. But when it's a divergent sum, I say it's 42. That's a generalization. Because the sum doesn't exist for those cases. But it's a pretty dumb generalization. For a good generalization, it has to make sense, right? It's not the only one. Let me tell you, it's not the only generalization. In fact, there were two famous generalizations that for a long time people thought they were the same until they were proven to be different recently. So you see there, people used to say, oh, the entanglement of formation is the generalization. Because there are other ways of generalizing it. There was another one that's very famous. And that particular one said, oh, it's the same. Because in most cases, we've always seen it's the same. Well, no, recently it was proven. It's not always the same.
Not too long.
I was hoping you wouldn't ask me. Hold on, I forget the name. Uh, I think it's actually, yeah, I just wanted to check it. Okay, I'm going to give you an unconfirmed thing because that's out of memory. I think it's exactly the distillable entanglement, but with the definition that I haven't given you with the optimization. The max of entanglement L pairs that you can actually have is the kind of the opposite process, you see? It says, give me Bell states and tell me how many copies of Bell states do I need to prepare my state. The other one is, okay, give me my states. How many Bell states can I extract with LOCC? And for a long time, that's what thought to be the same measure. Yeah.
So does that mean, I was just going to ask the question, could you create a state with bound entanglement using Bell pairs? And would that be like where the difference between those two measures arises?
Can you create, this is a faithful, so the answer is yes, you could. Make sense?
I'll have to think about that. It seems related with like them being uneven.
Yeah, but then you have to find, at least you have to say always, right? That's the thing. The problem is that in many cases, it's difficult to find counterexamples for this.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I don't see the connection between the word definition and the equation.
Okay. Well, it's not really the number, it's the number of EBITs. It's related to the log of that number.
The number of what?
Called EBITs, number of maximum entropy, minimal dimension states.
Okay.
But the definition does make sense, though. Even if you don't associate it with that,
gotcha.
Again, it's called entanglement formation because this thing actually quantifies. That's also why I avoided the mathematical definition for the other, because the connection is non-trivial between that and the other one. But you can see how this is a generalization of entanglement entropy, right?
Yeah.
Right. So mutual information, should I? Maybe we should postpone the mutual information and discuss a little bit what we have so far. The mutual information is a measure of correlation, entanglement and otherwise, classical and quantum correlation. So instead of that, let's discuss the entanglement measures that we have so far. So let's talk about niceness. Things that I want from it. Is it limited to small dimensions, small number of dimensions. We can say, is it easy to compute? Does it reduce to the entanglement entropy? Or pure states. Why do we want it to reduce? Why is it good that it reduces to the entanglement entropy for pure states? Because the entanglement entropy has a clear interpretation, informationally speaking. It makes total sense. It's literally the core definition, connects to the core definition of entanglement. That's the ignorance that you get on one system when you erase another. Makes sense? What else? Limited to small dimension, easy to compute, yeah. And this. Is it a measure of entanglement? By that I mean, does it satisfy the axioms? So let's discuss. I have boxes, but let's discuss. There's going to be, it's easy to write X's everywhere, right? But there are subtleties in every case. So let's discuss a little bit what we've seen. Entanglement entropy, is it limited to small dimensions? No. That's good. Entropy works no matter the dimension of the state, right? Is it easy to compute? How would you say? Is it easy to compute? It is easy to compute. Remember, my definition of easy is not if humans will have a hard time computing. After this one, humans may not have a hard time computing either. Or if the expression is nice, is if computers can do it in polynomial time. Make sense? You can actually use a computer to computed. All right, so this is good. That also shows maturity. When you present undergrads for the first time with in time and entropy, and I say, is it to compute? They say, no, just because of the they're not used to doing that. Does it reduce to the entanglement of pure states? Well, obviously, right? Is it a measure of entanglement? No. Why? Does not work. Now maybe I'll put it here. Does it work for non-pure states? No. See, so the entanglement entropy is nice. When I say, does it reduce to entanglement entropy from for pure states, I'm going to say, does it have a nice interpretation in terms of information theory? See what I mean when I say that? We can discuss it. So the entanglement entropy is pretty neat when the entanglement entropy is applicable. In fact, if it's applicable, why go elsewhere? Because this is the one that connects with information theory. The only problem that we have, and the problem why it's not a measure of entanglement, is in particular it violates, you can have separable states for which is non-zero. In particular, mixed states that are separable. Roy B, when it's a mixed state but still separable, it will give you a non-zero entanglement entropy. Is the original mixedness gets inherited by the partial state. Makes sense? The original ignorance makes its way to the partial state. Makes sense, everybody? Let's do the concurrence next. Let's leave negativity for the end. Or maybe, okay, let's do entanglement of formation first. Is it limited to small dimension? No, not really, no. It's general. That's why I'm really careful not to write here a min, because the min may not exist, actually. Whatever. In infinite dimensions. Is it easy to compute? Well, this is the important bit here. No, it's actually very difficult to compute. Does it reduce to the entanglement for pure states? Yes. Does it have a clear interpretation in terms of information theory? Yes, it does. So if we were able to compute that, entanglement of formation would be ideal. Is it a measure of entanglement? Actually, yes. Of all the measures of entanglement that we've seen, it's the only one. Well, concurrence in the more general definition also is, but not in the restricted definition for qubits, of course. Does it work for non-pure states? Well, yes, indeed. So this is a great... so this is a good thing. Yeah? Let me write the bad things and the good things. It's not always yes or no. This is a good thing. This is a bad thing. This is a good thing. This is a good thing. A good thing. So this thing satisfies all the axioms, has a cool interpretation in terms of information theory. It's just horrible to compute. Make sense? Let's do the concurrence. I mean, maybe I should write a box like, is the definition kind of silly? And then, but that matter of opinion. I mean, there are really good people behind concurrence, too, so don't get too influenced by my bias. Make your own judgment, okay? Is it limited to small dimension? Well, no, and yes, for the general definition. And yes, for the computable one. Okay. So in general, it's not easy to compute, but it so happens that for qubits, it's very easy to compute. Where is it? Right there. Is it, okay, then, oh.
Yes and no.
Yeah, is it easy to compute? Well, no, for the general definition, is as difficult as computing the entanglement of formation, so why, right, in that case? But yes, for the two-qubit case.
Sorry, can I ask about the top row? Isn't our computable one like only working in small dimensions?
Yeah.
Which one? Yeah, this one in per qubit. Maybe I should write. Or the two qubit case. On the two qubit case, you don't need to do the optimization. Actually, that's one of the cases that you could do with a computer, the optimization, typically. But you don't need to. Somebody did analytically for you. Analytically, quote unquote, in closed form, whatever you want to call that. Does it reduce to the entanglement entropy for pure states? No. Yes-ish, in the sense that you can relate to the entanglement of formation. Make sense? What I mean? Is it a measure of entanglement? Whenever it's applicable, yes, this is a measure of entanglement. Does it work for non-pure states? Yes, it does. Make sense? Now, finally, the negativity. Is it limited negativity? Is it limited to small dimension? No. This is well defined for this is well defined for any dimension. It's the same definition for all of them. Is it easy to compute? Always yes. Remember, this is a problem of a partial transposing and diagonalizing, which is polynomial of low degree. The easiest to compute of the ones we've seen. Does it reduce to the entanglement entropy for pure states? No. Is it a measurement of entanglement? Is it a measure of entanglement? Well, no. The answer is no. But yes, or 2 by 2, 2 qubits, and 3 by 2. Does it work for non-pure states? Yes. I'm going to give you a bound, by the way, because this is helpful. And to make matters worse.
But it's a measure of distillable entanglement.
But it measures, and then nobody's going to understand that. OK. No asterisk. But it is a measure of distillable entanglement. Which is helpful in its own right. Sometimes you want to know, above all in quantum info, right? If you want to use entanglement as a resource and you need to distill it, that's what you want to assess. There is a bound, what time is it? Okay, yes, there is a bound. I can, let me just write a relationship. Concurrence is always larger or equal than twice the negativity. Larger or equal than square root of 1 minus c square plus c square minus 1. I see. So you can bound. So it's not that they're unrelated completely, negativity and concurrence. And in fact, if you have an X matrix, so if it's a 2 by 2, if it's a 2 by 2 matrix and it's like this, 2 by 2, sorry, 2 qubits, 4 by 4, right? Your matrix is like that, which is what we call an X matrix, everything zero. This is an equal sign. Okay, for that kinds of matrices, the concurrence is twice the negativity. Qubits. It's so funny because in my field, there's a particular application that we look at 2 qubits for something. Particularly, those 2 qubits are particle detectors connected to quantum fields. And when you look at the entanglement they acquire through interaction with the field, and the state looks like that, a leading order in perturbation theory. And people still use the concurrence. I don't get it. Negativity is better because you can have the detectors to be two-level systems, but they could be harmonic oscillators or something else. And then negativity works as well for those, and then you can compare directly. But again, preferences. This is just projecting towards you my biases based on my experience with this. Does that make sense, everybody, in terms of quantifying entanglement? The main lesson to learn and to remember, no matter what you do in your life, is that, please, the entanglement entropy doesn't work for mixed states. That's the mistake that I see the most people make. And that in general, quantifying entanglement properly, something like the entanglement of formation, it's almost impossible. Computationally speaking, it's difficult. So we have to resort to something else, like negativity. we always have to make a compromise. That's the problem with this. We're getting into problems that are mathematically difficult to solve. Technically, I have to say we believe they're difficult to solve, right? Because we don't know P versus NP yet. At everything points, it's like, you know, it's like Goldbach conjecture or the Riemann hypothesis. Two. You know, takes effort. Same thing. So we don't know how to compute these things in general, except for negativity. Negativity is always easy to compute. Everything else becomes complicated the moment you move to mixed states, bipartite mixed states. Make sense? All right. There's one more thing that I won't see today, obviously. I will see on Monday. On Monday, we'll discuss mutual information, and we'll see a protocol that uses entanglement as a resource. We'll see quantum teleportation. So that in the next, in this tutorial is going to be about LOCC and about measures of entanglement. You're going to have to compute mutual information in this tutorial. It's kind of self-contained, so I'll give it to you. But we can discuss mutual information next in the next lecture, the interpretation. You're going to see that the mutual information, let me just define it, and I'll leave it there. Mutual info. Mutual information. I or AB. We will discuss it, because the mutual information comes from something from information theory, classical information theory. This is the Shannon mutual information, if you want. Okay, so let me define it for here. This is the von Neumann entropy of, von Neumann entropy of rho A plus the von Neumann entropy of rho B minus the von Neumann entropy of rho AB. There's a lot to discuss about this thing because the mutual information has two definitions in classical information theory that are equivalent. One, that this is kind of nice because it's kind of telling you, okay, take the ignorance in the partial state A plus the ignorance in the partial state B and subtract the ignorance that you originally had. This is related to somebody proposed this as a measure of entanglement in the previous lecture, right? Consider the ignorance, I don't think the person is here, but consider the ignorance of the first of the partial state A, consider the ignorance of the partial state B and subtract the ignorance that you started with. Is that a measure of entanglement? The answer is no. Let me just write this. No. You will see in the tutorial that this thing can increase under LOCC. In fact, this thing is a measure of total correlations in the state, classical and quantum. We will discuss, and I emphasize discuss, that classically there are two ways of defining this. One that is information theoretical. That's when it's based on what you can find out, the information you can actually get about a state. Optimizing over all possible measurements, if you want. The two are equivalent in classical theory. In quantum mechanics, they're not. And the difference between the two gives rise to something called quantum discord. I don't know, have you heard about quantum discord? You have? Yeah. We will talk about it. Not going to be a lot, because again, those things are complicated, but we will discuss what quantum discord is. Quantum discord are quantum correlations that we believe are not classical, but they're also not entanglement. And I'll discuss my own thoughts if you want. I mean, at some point I'll tell you, okay, here we finish with the common knowledge, then is my own research and my own thoughts on it. If this can be thought of, because I have a paper in which we look at discord as that's the remnant of being entangled in a higher dimensional state. Maybe you have tripartite entanglement with something else. And when you erase that, the remnant of that is discord. We actually proved that that's the case for qubit systems. Unfortunately, it's not the case for high dimensions. We will discuss all these things with you a little bit. So for now, I just gave you the definition, and it's an easy definition, right? And it's, again, ignorance in A plus ignorance in B minus the ignorance that you initially started before erasing one of them. The tutorial is going to be on Friday. It's going to be about computing this, computing measures of entanglement, and show that under LOCC, this thing can increase, the other one can't. Make sense? And also, you'll have the definition of LOCC a little bit more formalized with quantum channel formalism. This course is finite in time and space. Infinite in space is fine, but in time, at least from our foliation of space-time, is kind of tough. So we have to make decisions. So you're going to see that in the tutorial, OK? I think that's pretty much it. There would be another. On Monday, we'll do that and discuss quantum teleportation and possibly start the measurement problem or a quantum informational take on the measurement problem, rather. Any questions or anything? I like the pace. So this is going slower than I originally thought it'd be, but I like the reason why. The reason why is because you are asking good questions and we have good Gaussians, and I like that. So it's going well. All right, if there are any questions, that's it for the day.